my love, what a tale my thoughts could tell. Just like an old time movie about a ghost from a wishing well. In a castle dark or a fortress strong, with chains upon my feet, you know that ghost is me. And I will never be set free as long as I'm a ghost you can't see. If I could read your mind, love, what a tale your thoughts could tell. Just like the paperback novel, the kind the drugstore sells. When you reach the part where the heartaches come, the hero would be me. Hero often fails.
To talk with Art Bell, call the Wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call Art at 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art Bell by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
I wonder how many of you out there have wondered about what comes next. In other words, is it an eternal blankness? You would just never know you had been or have any awareness of anything ever again, dead and gone. Or is there something really on the other side? Is there some sort of ghostly existence? Is there an afterlife? Well, I suppose all of these really are quite good questions from Major Ed James. He's looked at EVP, and that sure is directly connected. I think it's directly connected to the answer to that question.
Good news.
Well, that's actually, it's a superb question. This life after death, or absolute zero, what comes after life, in a way, is it directly related to looking at EVP and finding what you find in EVP? Are we answering these questions as we look at this, Ed, or not?
I know there's some type of a relationship, but I don't know what type. I think the field of angelology is probably more apropos to the study of angels.
Yes.
Because they're there at the moment of death, and then the soul or light is gone, as well as the angels. But what's left behind many times is this electromagnetic mind pattern. It sloughs off, you know, like the shell of a caterpillar. When it transitions, it leaves this cocoon behind. Well, the cocoon is like this electromagnetic entity that thinks it's alive. That's why many people who think that they're channeling spirits who are dead,
yes,
they're channeling,
yes,
these residual energies. And you know, I noticed that you have Dr. Raymond Moody on tomorrow night.
That is correct.
He is in a much better position, I think, Art, than I, to address these questions. He had a wealth of experience in these areas, and I do not.
Well, right, except that you looked at EVP. So I wondered if what you saw with EVP, you know, added up to evidence to you. Or what does it add up to,
It supports the idea that mind sloughs off, and that because you need it, mind is like an electromagnetic a pattern that hangs around down here on terra firma while the light is gone.
Mm-hmm.
These entities, they have no light. They have no soul. And if you equate soul and light with life, they're not alive. They may have some type of an electromagnetic form or pattern that in many times is visible.
Okay, again, Ed, the only thing that flies in the face of that for me is the Meek's work, for example, where without question, if you buy what you were hearing, that was an ongoing, contemporary, current, responsive, in fact, the man speaking from the other side made corrections in electronic circuitry so his voice could be heard more clearly.
But so are the voices of things that are being channeled, Rampa or
but
others
that's
like
a,
that.
But that's a contemporary consciousness, Ed.
Let me give you an example. I mentioned this once before, about 4 years ago, to you. Think about this. If while you were asleep, I sedated you, then I took, let's say, a microwave generator or any other very, very small frequency device, and I shined it through your head, and I copied every single synapse and neuronal connection, and I made a copy of that, and I took it away.
Right.
You would never know.
Right.
Let's say I put that in another biological brain, and I give it some glucose, and I shoot it with a jolt of electricity, and this bionic thing wakes up. It has no idea that it's not you, the original copy.
Well,
it doesn't know
true.
It's a copy, and yet it is. Now, is that life? It can communicate with every, and you can even teach it, but it doesn't know anything past the point.
Is that life? If it's consciousness, then I'm not sure how else is it life.
But it's some type of a copy, and it doesn't have a soul. So I agree with you. There's something there that you can interact with, just like you can interact with a machine, a computer, or a cyborg. But at what point do we stop calling something life, or do we call it life? When is it not an apple and an orange?
Well, I don't know. When it has the ability, though, to interact to the degree of actually correcting circuitry to help the communication itself. I don't know, Ed. That seems.
Well, we can write software to do that, Art. Medical or otherwise. We can write medical software to correct a physician as he's cutting on someone. Do you call that alive? It's an electromagnetic pattern. And when you pull the plug from that, it's got to get energy somewhere. Where is it getting its energy from? Where's the sink? Is it just the electromagnetic field in general, or is there another field, a mind field or something else? I think Dean Radin made an understatement, Dr. Dean Radin,
yes.
When he wrote his book, The Conscious Universe. I think there's more to that than even he thought about when he wrote the book.
That could be. In a way...
Art, if I sound confused, I am.
Well, so am I. To me, that's a personality. What I heard coming across, if you listened very carefully, and so many did, I got so many emails about that broadcast. It was conscious. It was considering. It had personality. It had emotion. It had everything that we connect with being human and being alive in it, if you listened. I mean, it was all there, Ed.
You're talking about the spirit count.
Yes, sir.
I even though it wasn't interactive communication, I felt the same way about the child's voice, Art.
Oh, I see.
I feel, even though it wasn't the spirit com, where you have interactive communication,
right,
and a dialogue going on, which wasn't the case with the child's voice, which was totally spontaneous and apparently random, I felt subjectively that that sounded like a living voice, a living entity.
It sure did.
So, you know, what do we know? That there's a whole lot of things out there in the universe I have to allow for, and it's like the movie Solaris, where you just accept.
All right. You are saying tonight the sky is falling, or at least part of it, and the sky is falling around November or December 2005. The beginning of the end, you write. What in the world do you mean by that?
What I mean is that one of the key reasons that I'm building up a track record on these catastrophes, these global catastrophes, is because,
yes,
I want people to realize that the end really is near in terms of life on Earth as we know it. and it's right around the corner. So when I talk about the kill shot, and when I talk about the solar flares and things like that,
yes.
I'm not kidding. It really is close, and that's ergo the desire to build up a track record.
All right, November, December of 2005.
What I'm saying is that when you start seeing these meteor showers, especially the one that brings the space shuttle down, that's what's next is a very serious sequence of events that will kill a lot of people.
Yeah, why don't you go over that briefly again? You have said that when something, a meteor shower or something, forces the space shuttle down.
Now, the space shuttle has a life of about 5 years. After that, it's going to be replaced by new toys, new technologies. And the first one's up in a few months, maybe 4 or 5 months from now at the most, if there's no more delays. So we got this window with a maximum of 5 years where what professional remote viewers are saying is that just prior to this beginning sequence of these very serious solar flares, these killer flares, you're going to see the space shuttle forced down by a meteor shower.
All right. You know, after you said that, I thought, Ed, well, okay, if the space shuttle was forced down because of the intensity of a meteor shower or something like it, then what would happen to the International Space Station?
The same thing. It might come down. It will come down not under control, as well as many, many other satellites. What I'm saying is that we are looking at the beginning of the end of this particular cycle. This age is about to end, and we just happen to be alive during it. I've been saying this for years, of course.
I'm well aware of that. So there'll be some very large event of this sort with many, many meteors entering the atmosphere?
Yeah, actually coming down to the deck, some of them. But more seriously is that there's some type of an electromagnetic linkage between the sun and the earth that's created, and I don't understand it physically, and I'm not a geophysicist. And this may be something that's unprecedented as well. But that particular event, those series of events, allows what would normally be an M-class flare or something like that, or a low-intensity X-class flare, to penetrate Earth's atmosphere and heat it up greatly.
But the thing, again, to watch for is that's very specific, the space shuttle being forced down. When you see that happen, you know that then events are going to unfold very quickly.
Very quickly, yes. Very quickly indeed.
Well,
what that will mean in terms of survival is make sure you're in an area where there's a lot of fresh water, or at least glaciers that will melt fast, and not too fast, but there. And you're going to have protection that will be underground during these periods of these very serious flares, because the Earth, some parts of the Earth will be like a rotisserie.
What about, I mean, you have chosen your little paradise there in Hawaii.
I'm moving.
Oh?
I'm moving.
You're moving?
Yeah, I have a lot of travel to do. I'm traveling too much. I'll be in Japan next month and right around to the Ukraine, and I've got some things to do and places to go before the stuff hits the fan, and I'll probably end up more in the northern belts than in Polynesia.
So you're out of Polynesia for a very specific reason.
Business-wise and operationally and survival-wise, yeah, in that order.
Huh. What do you expect to befall the area where you now live?
I haven't checked it out. All I've done is use my own skills and techniques to look at where I should go.
Mm-hmm. Okay, when you say, again, let's define the sky as falling, is the sky, or November, December, is that when you're suggesting the shuttle will be forced down or likely may be forced down?
I'm not sure. We have an initial reading of December, but I have to do more work on that. It's getting close, though, and I'll have more information for you the next time I talk to you.
Again,
it's better to build up a track record. So that, and my intent actually is to save some lives on this, and that's what the track record's for, to get people ready.
Yes, I guess so. So then, once the events begin, your reporting would be very rapid about what to expect next and how soon and all the rest of it. The timelines would tighten up?
Yes, they would tighten up indeed. Yeah.
Huh.
We're talking about the loss of a lot of people, a lot of people on this planet, for reasons that I've outlined on your show and in the Killshot video, those kind of things. By the way, speaking of videos, the Suspect Zero DVD, that movie that I was in,
yes,
that is being released Tuesday, so I'm sending you a copy for my promise.
I very much appreciate that.
Ben Kingsley doing his thing. I have a cameo role in that movie too.
Right, I haven't had an opportunity to see it, but I'm looking very much forward to it, so please do send that.
I'll do that too. Do you have a copy of my Learn RV DVDs?
I believe I do.
Okay, you might want to have Ramona or somebody just peruse those and maybe give it a shot.
And how many people, you know me, I've said it to you a lot of times, I kind of would not want to, for example, review my own future. I don't want to know when I'm going to pop off planet Earth. I don't want to know that stuff. How many people do you meet don't want to know?
I'd say most everybody.
Really?
Yeah, most everybody, except very, very confident people. For instance, I have a business partner and extremely good remote viewer, Brent Miller. He has no problem remote viewing his depth. And I have a problem remote viewing mine, but he's one individual who has no problem whatsoever. He's very confident about life and death. So he's an exception.
Could a person, this is a key question, of course, remote view the manner of their own death? And if it amounted to something other than, for example, a fatal disease, if it amounted to walking in front of a truck or being in an airplane crash or something that could be prevented by taking an action, can you change?
Yes, you can, because as an individual, you can do that. Larger events, like, for instance, the Korean Peninsula event and the nuclear weapon use there, is the fait accompli, but individuals can choose not to participate in those events, just as they can choose to avoid kill shot scenarios, to not be in the wrong place at the wrong time, those kinds of things, as an individual.
Huh.
But the collective, as an event, the collective is a done deal. That's why I think prophets of old are able to see so far over the horizon for these.
So the larger events really can't be stopped, but individual smaller events can be.
Yeah, individual. Yes, you can avoid. You can zig when you should not have zagged.
So the implication of that is that we're not all puppets on a string with a preordained life that we act out like little actors and actresses, right?
We have a pretty tight box, but we do have a yes/no control button, and at any given time we can go left or right within a certain narrow range, obviously, of performance and behavior. But yes, we have choices, and the problem is we don't have awareness. Our awareness isn't as great. That's why I love my job, remote viewing, because even though you may not act on the information, you have a whole lot more awareness of what's going down than you would without this. Because these tools get around the active imagination, the egoic mind, the thinking process. It's very much cut and dry. And you may not like the answers and the information, because that's what remote viewing is, it's information collection skill.
Right.
You may not like it, but it's there in your face, and you can choose on whether to act on it or not.
Have you ever acted on viewing that you have done of your own rather immediate future? I'm not talking now about your death, but just something in the next few years, for example.
I've acted on medical things. I've looked at my own. A very common thing in our work is to look at a health trajectory, a
sure.
person's health. And at
sure.
any given time, what unconscious does by when you work a remote viewing session vis-a-vis your health trajectory, it shows you where a problem may be or if you need to do something to ameliorate a condition. Points in priority order, if you work, say, five sessions, on them, it'll give you the most important thing first. And, yes, I've acted on that.
These things that you bring to us, like the prediction for the volcano that's on the website right now, Was that done by you alone, Ed, or is this sort of a signed, sealed, delivered effort of a team?
That was done by me alone. My team is too busy. Right now, they're working on another missing child case and on a gold case. And let me check my operation sheet right here and see if they're working on anything else. Let's see. We've got a project in Japan. We have one more. We have a serial killer on the loose in Edmonton, Canada. They're tied up on that. My projects are the catastrophe predictions and Contact, which is my capstone career project.
I know. ET Contact is right. What you're talking about, and
yes.
We're going to touch on that, I think, in a moment. Another thing that I'd like to ask you about, Ed, to either do if you have not yet done, or to discuss what you know about the inner Earth. We were talking about that in the first hour. Hold tight. We're here at the bottom of the hour. I really do want to know what's down there in the middle. Don't you?
Now the peak is.
Wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5. And dialing toll-free 800-893-0903.
Good morning, everybody. Major Ed Dames, affectionately known as Dr. Doom, is my guest. And the message this morning is kind of doomish. The sky is falling. Part of it around November or December of 2005. Watch those shuttles carefully. I know this is a shot in the dark, quite literally, pun intended, I suppose, about the inner Earth, but I recall Ed once saying that there were some, well, perhaps machines that were coming to life under the surface of Mars, and I've long, very long, been fascinated, as you know, with the inner Earth, and tonight we had a story. Incidentally, I depend on all of you for these weird and unusual stories, and that's where I get them. You send them to me. So if you run into a story, the magnitude of the one I had tonight, for example, of the drilling and then the plan to go to the very center of the Earth, a real plan to do that, send them to me, artbell@aol.com or artbell@mindspring.com. But it occurred to me that either as a future project or one perhaps that Ed has already, researched at some point in the past. We're all curious about what's inside the Earth, Ed. Have you ever looked?
Only in terms of extraterrestrial involvement. That's it. Nothing else.
Huh. With regard to Mars or Earth?
Both.
Both. And what can you tell me about ET involvement with regard to Earth?
There is extraterrestrial intelligence. There are, let's call them bases. I hate to use the mundane word, but there are operation centers in seamounts, deep in seamounts, totally inaccessible to any human. And things come and go from those seamounts.
Things come and go.
Yeah, actual machines.
There have been all kinds of reports of UFOs disappearing into the ocean or rising out of it. I've heard stories from people at sea, seamen, Navy guys. They will tell in hushed tones these stories of things they have seen either come or go from the sea.
Yeah, even the military team members, way back when I was operations officer, I would task viewers and would take a look at myself at some of these comings and goings. And the actual stopping points are in seamounts, very, very deep in the earth.
Huh.
And, so because there's no access, that is not one of the things I chose to use in terms of contact. I used a different tact.
Oh,
yeah. I mean, there's no access there. You can describe it, but I want the real thing.
All right, it's something called Vanguard ET contact attempt, and that's coming what, in August in North America?
It is. In fact, if that's successful, and there's every reason to believe that it should be after doing this for 20 years, and if that's successful, I'm going to bring back a very prominent person to do the filming, and then I'm going to invite you to be there as a witness to it.
Huh. What exactly is involved?
Watching. Just watching. That's all. They put on the show and interact, and you watch.
So
it's a wild card. We're not sure what's going to go down, but we are sure that the location is correct. And what the genesis of this was a lot of work looking at this incident that happened in September 16th in 1994, the one that the late John Mack wrote about the children, the school children.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. Yes.
I, in terms of chain of custody, to know what agency we were dealing with, I use the term agency loosely. A lot of your listeners are going to hear that term, and they're going to think what you and I both know they're going to think. By agency, I mean extraterrestrial or non-human agency or interdimensional agency. Whoever orchestrated that or staged that particular appearance at the Ariel School outside of Harare, Zimbabwe,
yes,
whoever did that, that's what we locked on to find out where we could contact that agency, where using a higher intelligence, in this case remote viewing, could link up with another higher intelligence. And we found two locations on the planet Earth, and one of them is in North America, not too far from where you live, but
really
far enough where you'd have to get a long drive or get on a plane.
Huh.
But I'll take care of that for you.
So you're saying there's going to be an incident or something that can be viewed that would be...
ground truth.
How much of an incident are we talking about? Are we talking about sightings of a vehicle? Are we talking about a landing or
no,
an actual ET presence?
The sightings idea, that I used to lead scientific teams in the Southwest, particularly in New Mexico. And we've got that. We've got that down. We've got the photographs. We've got all the measurements in terms of artifacts of, let's say, propulsion. I use that term loosely. We've done all those studies, and we've gotten flybys. Actual flybys, but we're after the same thing minimally, or something unknown minimally, what those children had, and that is a CE3. We're talking about
a
face-to-face coffee
yeah.
clash,
mm-hmm.
and nothing less. Now, what will actually happen, we don't know, but the area is just brilliant in terms of their selection of where we should go to be. It is a brilliant, brilliant selection.
Do you want to say where?
No, I cannot. at this juncture. Perhaps on another show, I'll tell you privately, but I don't want to broadcast that. The last time I talked about the hot zone in America, that zone which was on a national park got overrun with joy seekers.
Oh, did it really?
Yes, it did.
I was not aware of that, Ed. But
National
I guess
Park Service was not really happy with me.
No? I don't remember the... what was the prediction or whatever associated with that? What did you say? Do you recall?
Well, I said that for at least 4 years, all of our recordings, and I led some pretty prominent scientists to this area.
Yes.
Until the phenomenon petered out. For instance... there's a guest that's going to be on Coast to Coast next week, and he was one of the prominent scientists, but I won't mention his name. 4 years in Chaco Canyon, New Mexico, which is a center of activity it's a total hot zone. We had all these measurements and great, great shots and flybys and all kinds of experiences, but then the phenomenon petered out, and it moved to another area, it being a lot of flybys.
Yeah, do you have any... idea, Ed, why we have these so-called hot zones, why we have areas where things tend to occur for a while with great frequency and then suddenly,
yes,
as you point out, shift?
Yes, we do. In fact, those studies go back to the military team when we were looking at this on behalf of NRO and NORAD. NORAD was interested in these fast walkers,
that
was the term then, and so was the NRO, CIA's, satellites in the sky.
Explaining to people who don't know, fast walkers.
A fast walker was the term, for instance, if you were in the past to run a Freedom of Information Act request against UFOs, you wouldn't get much because that was not the word that we used inside the fence. We used fast walkers, which was a term that was generated at NORAD when they had something that, oh my God, let's push the button and go up to DEFCON 1. They had to be able to differentiate between these UFOs.
Okay, again, though, Ed, fast walkers were things that were traversing either the atmosphere or just outside it at...
very fast speeds.
Like 25,000 miles an hour, just out a figure. I've heard of these...
25 to 31,000
miles per hour.
Right. But anyway, so they were called fast walkers and a few other names too. So because people didn't know that name, then the government was not deceiving anybody. It just said, "Oh, here's what we have on UFOs."
So there should be people out there, or have they already done it, submitting Freedom of Information requests for specific references to fast walkers?
Well, they did it because I mentioned it 6 years ago on your show.
Uh huh.
But there's other names, too, that are more contemporary that are still classified. But anyway.
And these Freedom of Information requests came back with positive results for so-called fast walkers?
They came out with a lot of blacked-out paragraphs.
Okay.
Because they're getting close to the real thing. That's really,
yes.
But anyway, the government doesn't know what these are. But we had to try. There's a spy unit that had to try its best when we were approached by our oversight committee to gain some insight into these things, as we've talked about many times on your show. Where were we? A mind is a terrible
thing
to lose.
Basically, we were with fast walkers. We were with Contact coming in August in North America, or, you know, a CE3.
Oh, I now remember. You wanted to know why some of these hot zones
were
hot,
right,
zones.
That's right, sure.
It has something to do with the entry points above the Earth, magnetically and gravitationally.
Oh, really?
Particularly magnetically, where things enter at these conjugate points or something like that, magnetic. I don't understand the physics at all. We may be dealing with a race that's 100 million years ahead of us nominally, so I don't have any problem saying I don't understand, but it deals with these points that are above the Earth that change from season to season.
Mm-hmm.
And the technology that some of these things use, whether they're robotic or manned, I use that term loosely, avails themselves of these particular points that change from season to season. Now, it could be something that's different than that, but that's the best that we could do, let's say, 15 years ago and try and understand why these points were important. Now, visually on the ground, it looks really neat because, for instance, I stood there with scientists from the Skunk Works and Stanford Linear Accelerator watching, sure enough, 9:30, 10 o'clock at night, zip, 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 in through these points,
yes,
these glowing things that come right down at us. And it's great to hear the scientists say, oh, my God, they're coming our way. And I turn around and say, excuse me, Ron, did you expect anything else? Oh, my God, here they come. I said, yeah, that's why we're here. We expected this. But when this actually happens to some of these people, and when they actually see the very thing they're out in the field to photograph and to measure and record, they need a change of underwear.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I understand. I've had one very close encounter. Thank you very much. And I was in shock for a long, long time.
That was a CE2, I think.
But that was close enough for me.
I think you would like art. Think of it. You know, I'm inviting you to a really nice
CE3.
Yeah.
Ed, there's no question in your mind. In other words, these hot points, these areas where these things happen, because of some sort of magnetic anomaly setup or whatever it is that allows it, it couldn't be a natural phenomena at all. You've definitely ruled that out. In other words, this is extraterrestrial intelligence.
Yeah, it is indeed. But the point, the contact point that we're going to in August is not one of these hot zones. It's actually a point that appears to have been selected by an agency, let's call it extraterrestrial for now, where we go to meet them, and it has nothing to do with technology or entry and exit point.
And you're inviting me along?
The second go-round, because we're not sure what's going to happen on the first one.
I appreciate that. So if you're vaporized in the first one, then I'm safe, and we won't have a second one.
Well, actually, I'm sending in one of my minions, and I'm watching with binoculars from a distance. And, they don't come back. I'm going to run like hell.
One of your employees, Ed?
Yeah, probably my partner.
Your partner? Your highly prized partner, huh? And you'll be watching at a safe distance like a general with a pair of binoculars.
Well, you know, somebody's
confused. Oops, there he goes. Oh, God. Okay. Well, that's interesting. But you don't want press for this. You don't want a lot of people there. You want this to be a private affair, huh?
Right. The second time we have three candidates, two of whom I know that are very respectable, very believable. For instance, somebody like Bert Rutan, who is very credible.
Sure.
I'm not going to be the one to report this, obviously. I'm too much of a wild card. But a very credible person needs to be there and will be there to both film and report on this, too. And then I can fade away into the background.
What do you know of the nature of this intelligence? I mean, you've apparently had some sort of communication to get this far, so you must know something of the nature of this intelligence.
They're not human, though, at least the one that we're going to contact. They are not human. Mm. I'm not even sure if they're humanoid, but they act as a sort of control system for things that happen on this planet, and they've been around a long time. Other than that, I just don't know.
Well, you could say that about angels.
Yeah, I mean, angels and aliens—they get mixed. They've been mixed up together a long time,
and I can see why.
Yeah,
they're both just as mysterious in a lot of ways, right? And I'm not sure they're not one and the same. Are you?
No, I'd be a liar if I said I'm uncertain about anything involving this particular contact. But I am certain about how we targeted it, the contact area, how we found it, what we did in order to do it, and in terms of consciousness, the mechanics and the dynamics that led to finding the area. And I will say it is a brilliant choice on their part. It is very brilliant. And I'll have more to say about that, obviously, in the future. Hopefully, one of the three candidates that I've chosen will have a lot more to say about it.
Boy, I'll tell you, I definitely wouldn't want to be the only one there. I mean, to have an experience like that actually happen to me, a CE3, to meet an alien intelligence, I'm not sure that I could do the job that I do now unless I had an awful lot of witness testimony to go along with what I was saying, Ed. If I was the only one saying that Ed led me to it and I saw it, I don't know if I could even come on and say that.
Well, we'll have a lot more. We're going to photograph this. And so when you have prominent figures who are involved in the photography,
yes,
and the videography,
yes,
in conjunction with them reporting on their own experiences, not Ed Dames, but some very prominent people, that is a very different animal. Very, very different.
Well, you're right. Of course it is. It would be at the least regarded as a very major incident. Photography, lots
also,
of important people to say, yeah, I was there, I saw it, it happened.
And if there are physical things involved here, if, for instance, you obtain physical evidence or you are transported somewhere where man cannot go, and you bring back, if you come back at all, something that cannot be found on this planet.
Yes.
You get the picture?
Yeah, well, I do, and it's a little grim, perhaps, if I come back at all.
It's wonderful. It's an adventure, Art. It's totally an adventure. It's a whole lot less grim than the things I've been talking about the aforementioned tonight.
I suppose, in a way, possibly.
And Art, you and I are both, I mean, we share one thing passionately, and it's this mystery, this UFO ET mystery. I mean, you and I are both on the same sheet of music here. Think of the chance.
Well, you're right there. And it's going to be that soon. August?
August. In fact, you know, the way things are going, it better not be any later because it's not going to happen.
In other words, those ominous events that lurk toward the end of the year would, in a way, supersede...
Eclipse
completely such contact.
Possibly, yes. And it's a funny set of coincidences, serendipitous perhaps.
Is it a coincidence? I don't think so.
I think the timing is immaculate.
So in other words, this contact, this CE3 contact, could have something to do with forewarning, preparing, or otherwise passing information about what's about to happen.
My gut feeling, and it's just a gut feeling, is not remote viewing. Because remote viewing was concentrated on actually determining the
right
site. And my gut feeling is that it has something to do with avoiding a nuclear conflagration, a World War III, a nuclear exchange.
It has
something to do with turning mankind's attention to a higher intelligence and feeling a little bit more humbled and yet desirous of those toys.
That'd be a big jump. Hold on, Ed. We're here at the top of the hour. I'm Art Bell. And from the high desert, this is Coast to Coast AM. We're about to open the lines for Major Ed Dames, and that could really mean trouble. Stay right where you are.